Welcome to Steve Dale's Pet World.
You don't have a better bad idea than this?
This is the best bad idea we have, sir.
If you've got pets, he's got answers.
You are a sad, strange little man.
Steve can help. We're positive.
Oh, God, this thing is going downhill fast.
You've got America's pet expert here on Steve Dale's Pet World.
This is an important show. Of course, every week I say it's an important show, and every week I mean it, because it is an important show every week. You know, leptospirosis. What? Leptospirosis. It's not something you want your dog to get. And the thing is, you could get it too. Or if you have children, it's possible. Not necessarily only from a dog that's left unprotected, but from wildlife, from just being out and about. And we'll have an expert explain why that's the case. And, you know, leptospirosis had historically been thought of an issue that is only for out in the countryside somewhere, out in the middle of nowhere. Well, that's not true anymore. It's not been true for years. And what we now know, and I'll have the person Amanda Smith on the phone, who's a PhD candidate at The Ohio State University College of Veterinary Medicine, who did research to, in fact, confirm that leptospirosis is now in Chicago and in big cities, but she used Chicago in her study and other big cities as well, far more than ever before. And so are ticks and tick disease. We will talk to the immediate past president of the Companion Animal Parasite Council about that. You know, July 4th is right around the corner. It's a holiday you may love. It's a holiday your dogs probably do not love. And we will talk about what we can do. And in fact, the good news is that there are things you can do for dogs that are terrified of fireworks. There's more you can do if you start now, for sure, than if you start on, say, July 3rd. And also, I want to talk about what we did last week on the show, because it was huge. It was groundbreaking. And I'll tell you why that's the case. Huge, groundbreaking. It's information about leptospirosis being, yeah, we always, or at least in the past 5 years, 6 years, we've thought about that it must be more prevalent than we previously thought about in big cities. But, you know, science is science, and science needed to be done about that. Leptospirosis is everywhere, and it's certainly what you've learned, I guess, cutting to the chase. It's in big cities, too.
Yeah, definitely. We traditionally, in the past, since this disease, it's a bacterial disease that is often spread through the urine of infected wildlife species like rats and raccoons, and then also livestock can carry it as well. So previously we had thought about it being in like country areas where dogs are allowed to free roam and have a lot of interaction with wildlife and livestock. But lately we've been seeing it a lot more in urban areas. And we did a nationwide study where we identified dogs in urban areas as being higher risk than others. And other individuals have also found similar findings that dogs in urban areas are at risk.
Is that because of city rats also carrying leptospirosis?
You know, it's so hard to pinpoint exactly what's going on, but that is definitely a component of it that we suspect. Rats are often do carry the bacteria, and when you think about the high density of rats in urban areas and then the high density of dogs, it definitely is a potential transmission pathway that makes a lot of sense to us.
What is leptospirosis? What are we talking about?
Oh, it is a bacterial disease. And as I said, spread in urine by a bunch of different animals. And dogs usually come in contact with it. Say that rat urinates into a puddle overnight, and the dog either walks through that puddle and has scrapes or abrasions on its paws or its body, or if it takes a sip or a drink out of that puddle as it's walking, it can then get the bacteria, and bacteria then produces disease in the body. And with leptospirosis in dogs, we see a wide range of clinical illness. We can have some dogs that really doesn't affect them much and they clear it on their own, and others where it becomes a very serious disease.
So much so that dogs do die of leptospirosis. But the bigger concern, let me rephrase that. An equally significant concern, because a dog dying is a big concern, even a dog getting sick, but an equal concern is that this is a zoonotic illness, which means people can get it from their dog.
Yes, definitely. And, You don't see that documented a lot. Usually in humans, when you see this disease, it's individuals taking really nice vacations to places like Hawaii, and they're in swimming holes and come into contact with the bacteria that way. But as it is zoonotic and dogs can carry it, there definitely always is that chance that an individual can get it from their dog if their dog is infected and they're not practicing proper hygiene around that pet.
So if a toddler in particular, but it could be anyone not washing their hands, but toddlers put their hands to their mouths, maybe more than most adults, and a dog just had an accident in the house. What's more, dogs with leptospirosis are more likely to have accidents in the house. That's one of the symptoms of leptospirosis, and is toddling or whatever toddlers do, and then puts the hand to the mouth, and the dog does have now you've got a toddler with a potentially fatal illness.
Yeah, and that's even outside of leptospirosis with any zoonotic disease. There's a lot of them that pets can carry, which a lot of individuals don't always realize when owning a pet, and we always think of children and toddlers as most at risk for any zoonotic disease just because of the things that they do and the close contact that they have with pets. So with leptospirosis, but also any zoonotic disease in general, it's always important to teach children kind of proper interactions with pets and, you know, not just toddlers do so many fun things. So it's always keeping an eye on them, teaching them how to interact properly with the pets and washing hands after and things like that.
Now, what you did find, no surprise, is that dogs that are vaccinated, particularly with the vaccine that covers the most serovirus or strains of leptospirosis, is those dogs didn't get, for the most part, didn't get leptospirosis.
Yeah, and that's actually something that we're still working on now in Chicago specifically, is collecting information on more dogs that have not been diagnosed with leptospirosis to really understand the role of that vaccine component in the disease. But in all the cases that we looked at, none of them were fully vaccinated against the disease. So right now we do suspect that having your dog vaccinated is, if the dog is at risk, is a good way to prevent the disease.
And what you've already determined, if your dog is outside a fair amount, and if you live in a big city, if you live in a small city, if you live out in the countryside, protection is a good idea. Dr. Yeah. Amanda Smith, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Dr. Craig Pryor is the immediate past president of the Companion Animal Parasite Council. This is, Dr. Pryor, you have the most fun job on the planet, I think, as a consul. You sit around and predict where parasites are going. But I argue it's an important job. I suggest that you probably agree. Otherwise, you wouldn't be doing this.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. If we can protect our pets, it's a good thing. But by protecting our pets, we're also protecting our family, because there's some nasty things out there.
Yeah, one of those nasty things you're referring to, I suspect, are tick diseases. And as there are more ticks in more places, which there are in America than ever before, I argue it's an epidemic, actually. If that's the case, then might dogs actually be a sentinel for us?
Yes. Yeah, so we actually had a paper that got published today that will show you that dogs are a sentinel for the risk of human infection for Lyme. So you can look at our maps and see what the dog prevalence percentage is in your county, and that is your risk of developing Lyme in your county. And that's important to know, because if we can protect our pets, we can then further protect our family.
Yes, absolutely, and I totally understand that. But we do need to protect our pets against something unique to our pets, and that's heartworm disease, which is spread by mosquitoes. It's got to be frustrating to you that this stuff is greatly preventable, at least as far as our pets go, but yet the number of instances of heartworm and various tick diseases is on the rise.
We're seeing tick diseases, Ehrlichia, Anaplasma, and Lyme slowly spread in areas that we haven't formerly seen before, and we're seeing heartworm as well. Heartworm prevalence is actually up 20% over the last 5 years. And it's now moving into areas which we haven't seen before. And a lot of that is, one is lack of usage of preventives, but also we're seeing a lot of transport of rescue dogs and relocation dogs, and then people who just travel. And when they travel, they're not looking at what the risk is for their pets. So we're seeing heartworms show up in areas that we otherwise wouldn't have seen it. And the bad thing is, it's so easily preventable, but it's such a devastating disease to these dogs, especially when they die from it.
So I have an idea, and that is using what is a multimodal approach. It's not really my idea. It's, in fact, your idea far more than mine. But explain what that is, and explain, first off, if that's also a good idea.
It's a great idea. So, you know, we have really effective heartworm preventives that you give. Most of them are once a month. There's one that's an injection, lasts 6 months. But it's something that you give your dog, and it prevents them from getting it kills the larvae inside the dog, so it stops the adult heartworms. And it's very, very effective. But we can also help protect these dogs from the outside as well by stopping the mosquito, which is the vector. The mosquito is what spreads heartworm disease. We can kill the mosquito and repel it as it's trying to attack our dog. So we can attack it two ways, one from the inside, one from the outside. And we should be going after the mosquito, because mosquitoes spread more than heartworm disease. They're a risk to humans for Zika and other types of viruses and West Nile, things like that. So if we go after the mosquito as well, and with mosquitoes, it's all about the microclimate. So a lot of people think, well, there's no mosquitoes in my area because it's dry, it's sunny, it's whatever. But mosquitoes love microclimates. It only takes a Coke bottle cap full of water for a mosquito to be able to reproduce.
Yeah, so by microclimates, you mean, you know, for example, in Las Vegas, you would think typically, no mosquitoes here, we're in the desert. But you have all those water fountains and other areas where there is lots of water, actually. At least by mosquito standards, where mosquitoes really are reproducing there. And it turns out right there, there's a problem with heartworm, because where there are mosquitoes, there's likely to be heartworm disease. And the thing now is to give these chewables for protection are sometimes the spot on. I'm talking about the products you apply at the back of the neck of a dog. Are those sometimes maybe even a better choice because of the word you used, repellency?
Right, because they will repel and kill mosquitoes, ticks, and fleas. So you have a great alternative and an effective alternative as long as you put it on every 30 days.
All right. The website we're talking about is petsandparasites.org. That's where you get these maps that can predict where you live, no matter where you live in America, where, yeah, ticks and fleas and tick disease to go along with those ticks and heartworm disease having to do with mosquitoes are. And what's more, you're looking at disease prediction in general now, Dr. Pryor.
Yes, we are. We can tell you what the risk is in your county next month. It's at petdisealerts.org. So you can see what your pet's risk is for contracting Lyme, Ehrlichia, Anaplasma, and heartworm.
All right.
And so that's a 30-day forecast. It's 94% to 98% accurate.
Well, that's not bad. Petsandparasites.org. That's the other website. Dr. Pryor, thank you.
My pleasure.
You know, I do speak all over the world about animal behavior issues, about the human-animal bond. But every once in a while, I speak in Chicago, and I'll be doing that. It's called The Modern Dog, In and Out of the Shelter, Saturday, July 27th. The price for this is pretty good. I'll talk about that in a moment. July 27th, the entire program, and includes other speakers as well. It begins at 9 a.m. It continues through 1 p.m. at the University of Illinois at Chicago, the Student Center East Building, room 302. Other topics include one of my favorites, and that is enrichment and training in animal shelters, the relationship you have with your dog, the shelter dog sleepover. That's what the talk is called. I'm not quite sure what that is all about. This is something that I think is fascinating. A dog is not a dog. Individual differences and implications for mental well-being. And I don't know exactly what it's about, but I think I'll be giving a similar talk about the same kind of subject at a couple of veterinary conferences coming up. Also, I will be speaking about Fear Free, an initiative to minimize fear, anxiety, of stress, and stress not only of veterinary visits, but home life, day-to-day for our pets, but also in animal shelters. And that will be my focus, July 27th, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. I believe I'm speaking at about 12 noon. And these are all, this is not a fly-by-night. I don't know why they want me as part of it, because they have these PhDs and people with a lot of letters after their names speaking at this thing, but I'm one of them, and I'm happy to be a part of this. And by the way, the cost, free. So there's a conference, a behavior conference in town for a couple of days before this happens, and that cost is not free, but they wanted to do something that was open to the public. And they're doing that July 27th, and I hope to see you there. Last week on the show, we talked about cats. And boy, we talked about two topics, cat allergies, big time, and we also talked about declaw and how the state of New York is going to ban declaw for cats. Ban it. And if you want to check out that podcast, do so. It's worth hearing if you happen to miss the show, and you can find it at WGNradio.com. Of course you can. You can find all the podcasts from all the personalities at this radio station there. You can listen to those podcasts, play them in the background, as what you do is also play the sound of fireworks in the background. It's easy to get a recording now of fireworks or to play fireworks on YouTube. Wherever you get the recording or the sound of fireworks, play it at a low volume. And what I'm giving you now is advice for dogs that are afraid of fireworks. Now, if they're absolutely terrified and you know that is the case from previous experience, call your veterinarian. These are for dogs. This advice that I'm about to give is for dogs that clearly are afraid of fireworks. They don't like fireworks, but you wouldn't put them in the list of absolutely terrified. So dogs that are afraid, we can do something now to minimize that fear. And that is by playing, it's called desensitization and counter conditioning. It's playing the sound of those fireworks and rewarding that dog at the same time. Now you're playing the sound so soft at first that your dog can barely hear it. That's the idea. And dogs can't, nor can people learn if they're terrified. So we want to minimize that anxiety even more. Plug in an adaptyl diffuser. Adaptyl is a copy of a pheromone that helps to have dogs feel more comfortable in their own environment. It lowers anxiety just like that, instantly. So that's a good thing. Plug in the adaptyl diffuser. Play the firework sound at a very low level at first. Then gradually pump up the volume. But do something with your dog so your dog associates something good with that sound. So what you do with your dog, well, it could be, depends what your dog likes to do. For a lot of dogs, it's simply eating. Feed your dog while the sound of fireworks is playing ever so softly. And over time, pump up the volume. Or you could play with a squeaky toy with your dog, toss a ball, whatever your dog loves the most. And again, over time, pump up that volume. Now, if your dog says, whoa, I'm not doing this, I'm not chasing that ball, this is scary, then you have the volume too loud and you've done it too quickly, so back it off. It can take a week or two or three to do this, but we now have enough time, barely enough, but enough time to do this, and with the help of products like Adaptyl, and there's another, there's a nutritional supplement called Zentral, which you can ask your veterinarian about. Again, the whole idea is to minimize that fear, anxiety, and stress. Now, for dogs that are in the category of absolutely terrified, what do? Well, a psychopharmaceutical may be the answer. That, you know, and people say, I don't want to drug my dog. Well, to drug your dog where your dog is feeling okay, maybe not great, but okay, that's one choice. But the other choice is that your dog is actually thinking, I'm going to die. What do you think is the better choice?